Hello and welcome to The Improverbial, a podcast where we unearth obscure sayings and phrases from around the world, invent absurd new proverbs, and talk about things mundane, spurious, irrelevant, and profound. I am the Capitalist, Pete Kirkwood.
And I'm Lisa Favette, the Tilt Thinker. I've been doing and coaching improv for many years. Pete and I have been doing improv together for some of those years. This podcast is a mashup of Pete's interest in the science of well-being, my background in education and human development, our shared fascination with the world's idiomatic weirdness, and our superpowers in improv comedy. We are the Improverbializers.
Woohoo!
Yeah!
Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of the Improverbial Podcast. And today, let's just jump right in, shall we?
Let's do it, Pete.
All right. Today, we're talking about the saying, to cost an arm and a leg. As most fluent English speakers would know, this means is something you say when you think something's very expensive. And it has a slight connotation of being like unfairly expensive.
Unfairly, right. That it's a really large amount of money in order outrageous. To get this thing. It's outrageous.
Where did this come from? I mean, I did some research.
Yeah, I did too, Pete. What'd you find?
Well, I found a bunch of baloney, I think, actually. The first, I found one that was like, people said, oh yeah, it's reference to soldiers that lost limbs in one of the world wars or something. And like, you know, they had to pay a very high price for the war.
Ooh, I didn't see that one. Mm-hmm. Eh, okay.
And then somebody said, this one is the most ridiculous. Paintings in the 15th century. Did you get this one?
Yeah, I saw this one.
It was ridiculous. Okay, so it's like, the assertion is that like it's hard to paint arms and legs. And so like if you wanted to get a cheaper portrait, you could like have them paint fewer legs and arms.
I didn't read it like that. I read it like, if you just want the bust, you know, that's one. But if you wanted the whole body, so which would include the heads and the legs, it's going to cost you more.
But then would it cost you, it seems like you'd have to be giving up an arm and a leg to get. I just couldn't make sense of this thing. And also, like, do you see a bunch of paintings in the 15th century with people, like, dismembered and only three
but
limbs
just
and
bust,
stuff
yeah.
like that?
You know? Don't see their full arm nor their legs.
And also, like, as an erstwhile amateur painter.
Yes, Pete?
I can tell you that arms and legs are really not the hard part. It costs you a head or a face. Like, faceless paintings would be cheap.
It's just going to cost you a face.
Or if you're bald, it would be cheaper.
Because hair is hard to paint. Like eyes, like to really get the exact eyes of somebody, like a hand, you can put on a generic hand. But Pete's eyes and nose are so very specific to paint, right? And to paint that would
Clip
be difficult.
Clip art hands. For,
yeah. Well,
no, right. So anyway, so maybe, who knows? Maybe that's right. Maybe it's not. But then there's another one that said, a theory that it just comes from earlier expressions that use the terms of arms and legs as ways to describe a high cost. Like I would give my right arm for the antidote to this poison or
this
something.
The arms and legs are examples of items that nobody would consider selling. So if you're going to buy this, it's going to cost
you. Or buying for that matter.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have an idea about where this might have come from, which is older still. And
you're going to come up with your theory. Where this
is my
came
theory.
From. Okay.
Totally
love it.
Unsubstantiated. Okay. My theory comes from Shakespeare, and anything comes from Shakespeare has got to be right.
It's got to be right. Because he made everything.
Totally. This is from the Merchant of Venice around 1600 or so, a little bit before. Uh-huh. I'm gonna give you a quick summary of the Merchant of Venice. If you don't mind. Are you familiar?
I don't mind at all. Please.
Antonio, prominent merchant of Venice. He has a friend named Bassanio. Bassanio is like a ne'er-do-well. He needs money to woo his bae, Portia. Okay. And his boy Antonio is super rich, but his money's all tied up in like Bitcoin or something.
Oh yeah,
or,
that's
like,
right.
You know, it was like
Shakespeare invented that too.
Yeah. No, sorry, this part's true. It was he had merchant ships out at sea, and he was like, "Oh, I'm gonna rake it in when they come in, no problem." So Antonio agrees to guarantee a loan for Bassanio. Bassanio gets the loan from Shylock, a name you've probably heard, who's like a Jewish moneylender. And historically, like everyone sees Shylock as this avaricious, greedy guy, but I don't see it that way. As a side note, in addition to being rich, Antonio's also like notoriously anti-Semitic. And the terms of the loan are this. There's no interest, but in the event of default, Shylock gets a pound of Antonio's flesh, which obviously means he'll die. Of course, Antonio's ship's wreck. He defaults. Shylock wants his flesh. And the rest of the story is like how the Christians all like get out of keeping their promises and end up winners, even though they're complete freaking assholes. And the Jew gets shafted six ways from Sunday. It's terrible. Anyway, the idea is an arm or a leg or a pound of your flesh is valuable to all of us. And so anything that would cost that much is seen as like unfairly expensive.
You know what, Pete, this is going to find this. When you look up etymology of arm and leg, it's going to come right to the text of this podcast. Folks, you heard it first.
Like, yeah, Shakespeare and Lisa and Pete.
Yeah. So it's all about. So let me just ask you, Pete, you know this storyline well and all these characters. And is this what came to mind when we were talking about this proverb? You said, hey, wait, I think there's a connection to Merchant of Venice. Or how did you stumble upon this?
I was just thinking about like chopping off parts of your body, you know, like and paying debts with them or paying for things.
I have
with
a
them.
Whole theory on Silence of the Lambs and kidding.
Oh, God. It gets pretty grisly at that point. Oh,
chopping
man.
Chopping off body parts or Fargo. You know, we could do any of those.
Oh, God, yeah.
No, so that's where your mind went then. You're like, well.
Well, I am kind of cultured.
Well, you know, everybody knows literary. That, Pete. You can't see him, but he is wearing a top hat right now.
And it has one of those graduation things on top, the flat
he's
things.
Got a mortar
board. I like to go even further than.
Yeah, he does.
No, Lisa, this can't be lies. This is all true. Oh, more or less true.
Sorry. But you know, just to tease you, Pete, he's actually in a knit cap right here.
Yeah.
So
I'm all sweatered up.
It's all true. I got a really good looking guy sitting across from me. I'm so lucky.
I got a good looking guy.
What? Yeah, good.
And Lisa, you guys are all great.
We're pretty good looking, let's just say.
So do you have any thoughts, any well, fun nuggets?
I was thinking about this idea that, you know, arms and legs, you know, we wouldn't want to get rid of those for money. And I was thinking, what are some other unusual things people have sold for big money?
Wow.
And yeah, there was a really interesting list there and I'll share some of those with you. So we've got an artist. Some of these have to do with artists. You can imagine Tracy Emin. She went through a really difficult breakup and she went through some depression. And so she was in her bedroom for, I think they said like over a month. And what she ended up doing when she came out of her depression is she sold her unmade bed and her surrounding like area of her bed, like all the Kleenex and the cans that were strewn upon the floor. Yeah. She sold it as an art installation for $150,000. And the person who bought it turned around and sold it for $4 million.
Get the hell out.
Yeah. Her little depressed nest.
And now she's all, yeah.
She's like, yeah, look at me. I'm happy
she
now.
She says her boyfriend like, actually, I want to come back to that thought about money and happiness in a minute.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Let's come back to that. So I got a couple more that are a little bit fun. This one's, I actually heard of this one before. 1977, one of Elvis's assistants sold a glass he had drank out of. There's a little bit of water still left in it. He sold it for $455.
Who? Wait, why?
Yeah. So an assistant of Elvis, he drank out of this glass.
Just Elvis's spittle.
Yeah. And the assistant took the glass. There was a little bit of water still left in it. Sold it for $455. That's
that
pretty
was
smart.
Big money back then.
What's that? That's big money.
I mean, when was this?
1977. Yeah. Now, Pete, you're going to like this one because this is how you and I are going to make our big money.
Okay.
Again, an artist. He sold a painting. The painting was called Fresh Air. He sold it for $10,000. The twist in this is the painting only exists in the artist's imagination. He wrote about the painting and sold that idea for $10,000.
It's kind of like an NFT. I mean, not exactly.
You know what? I thought of the same thing.
Yeah.
It's like this concept, like the idea of it, the concept of it is sold.
Yeah.
It's a cool thing.
Yeah, I'm thinking of a masterpiece. It's for sale, $1 million.
I'll take it.
And then you should sell it.
And then I'm going to sell it to Taylor.
For like $4 million.
$4 million.
And then Taylor can be like, everyone should buy this because it's already appreciated in value by 300% or whatever.
And then we're all going to rule the world in our podcast.
We're
going to
buy half of Leelanau County and retire there. So... Is there more?
You know, I just want to do this last one because this one is not to do as an artist. So, a woman, she offered to sell advertising space on her forehead. She said, I will tattoo your ad onto my forehead. And a casino bought that space for $10,000. It was goldenpalace.com. So an online gambling. Oh, Golden Palace. And there's a picture of her. Folks can look this up.
She really did it.
She has goldenpalace.com tattooed on her forehead. Now this is, to go on to the next one, a couple were expecting a baby. And they said, you have the right to name our baby. And it was on eBay for an auction.
Wow.
And the highest bidder gained the right to name their baby for $15,100. And the lucky winner was GoldenPalace.com.
Oh, no way.
So we have a person out there, Golden Palace so Benedetto. Congratulations to the happy couple.
Well, Golden Palace isn't that bad. It sort of sounds like some kind of exotic name. I thought it was going to be like Josh.
What? I'm going to pay you $15,000 to name your baby Josh.
Oh man, that's
so those crazy. That's the list I came up with. So
I wonder how Golden Palace feels about that.
I mean, I think they get their return on just being on these types of lists,
It's a little girl.
I don't know.
Goldie kind of sounds
like.
I know.
You could do something. I'm sure they were like, hey,
pal,
name
if it's
it
a boy, you could call him pal or whoever. I don't want to be gender specific. Anyone could be called pal or Goldie for that matter.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would suppose this couple is like, we're going to still call him Jeff. But
Josh,
but on the birth certificate, Golden Palace. Congratulations! Hey, when you're 18, you can change it. I have
right.
No
it's probably
idea.
Some clause in the contract
that he never.
Or Josh could resell to Golden Palace.
You mean Golden Palace?
I mean pal.
I'm so confused right now.
So confusing. All right, I want to go back to that thing that I said earlier, which had to do with losing. Like if you did lose a limb or something, and it reminded me of a study that I had read about. People are terrible at estimating how current life events will affect their future happiness. This is me going back to my, well-being stuff. People anticipate that things like winning the lottery will significantly raise their happiness. And they anticipate that things like a traumatic accidents will make them significantly less happy. But in fact, most people's subjective feelings of well-being are remarkably stable over time, notwithstanding those kind of events. That means that for most people who experience big life events, whether the huge strokes of luck or sudden misfortunes, they tend to return back to a basic, more or less like a set point of hedonic well-being in an astoundingly short period of time. I'm talking like 8 weeks. So if you feel bad, hang in there. It's going to get better. And if you feel super great, don't worry. Reality's coming after you.
If you feel...
It's going to suck again soon.
Well,
don't worry.
I was just going to say, but what if your stasis is feeling bad?
You know, I'm glad you asked because there is this theory about set point in hedonic and happy in like how content and happy you feel in your life. There are strategies that are proven and reliable that help people raise their set point. And those are like incorporating these practices into your daily life. Things like expressing gratitude, building strong relationships with family and friends, helping other people, learning new skills, life experiences, those kind of things. You can actually reliably incorporate habits that will raise your set point. Okay. But the point is, whatever your set point is, you win the lottery. After a little while, you're probably gonna be back more or less at your set point. And if you lose an arm, literally, you can lose a limb and very rapidly revert to something very, very close to your previous set point.
Aw, that's good news.
I find that reassuring.
I love that. Yeah, you can really have a big traumatic hit physically or psychologically or emotionally, and you probably will be able to get back. Mm-hmm. Unless there's brain trauma, right, Pete? If
there are probably some exceptions.
Reassuring,
information.
I just wanted to bring it. I just wanted to leave it on a negative note.
Yeah. Okay, great. Let's leave it right there.
Let's leave it right there. Welcome to the second part of our show.
Yeah.
I enjoy this part, Pete. And the only problem is our Proverbatron, It's cost us an arm and a leg, and unfortunately, I won't be able to wave you down or give you any type of nonverbal cues because I lost both my arms in order to get the repairs done on this thing.
Both of them?
Yeah. Look at me, Pete.
Not supposed to cost both your arms. Supposed to cost an arm and a leg.
What?
Yeah.
I paid two arms.
Oh, you got ripped off.
I literally, Pete, you were ripped off. Why are you bringing back this trauma?
It's amazing how functional you are.
I am.
Look at how you, and I love how you're using your nose to control the mouse on your computer and stuff.
Did you see how I did that? Now, Pete, I'll tell you, what you talked about, I surprisingly only took me about 24 hours and I was back to my stasis of a happy-go-lucky Lisa.
You really are amazing. And I can't believe they made those prosthetics for you so fast.
I know. And they almost look real, don't they?
They do, surprisingly real.
Well, thank you for noticing all that. You know, we're already on our part of the show where everything is completely made up. Yeah. We will be making up a new proverb on the spot, and it is improvised. It is all hogwash.
Yeah.
And also to say this very expensive Proverbatron in which I lost my two arms, is financed by the Boardman Review. We're so grateful to them. And I say,
thank you, friends.
Thank you. Let's turn this puppy on and see what words we get from it.
Press that sucker with your nose.
Here we go. I'm going to push it and I just push it with my nose.
Owl.
Owl. Our first word is owl.
All right, I'm going to just walk over there with my two able-bodied hands.
Oh, show off.
Press this button.
Horoscope.
Oh, and the second word is horoscope.
Horoscope. Ooh, owl and horoscope.
How lucky is that?
That's really lucky. I looked at my horoscope this morning and it said you're going to come up with some type of phrase having to do with an owl. Isn't that really weird?
Yeah. And it's funny because my horoscope, I always check my horoscope every morning.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
And mine said you will be a handsome man in a fuzzy sweater and a woolen cap. What? So that's why that's why I put these clothes on.
Pete, and you nailed it.
Thank you.
You're like really, really dashing, extra dashing. And this part is not untrue. The sun is coming on, is like dawning on you right now and your blue eyes are sparkling. Boy. Pete, if I could sell a picture of you, NFT? I'd be making $4 million.
We should try it. So let anyone want to bid on Lisa's mental image of me sitting here with the sun sparkling off of my steely blue eyes. Please start
bidding. The bidding is starting at $1.2 million.
Yeah. Well, okay. Let's aim big.
Okay, go ahead. You start.
Let's start the bidding at $150. Just paid by Venmo to Pete Kirkwood.
And then I will explain to you how Pete looked as he sat here.
At this moment. She's going to take a picture.
I'm actually going to take a real picture of Pete. Because people need to see what I'm seeing. It's really gorgeous.
A smolder.
And you can really zoom in on his blue eyes.
Oh, yeah. And my lovely complexion.
Okay. So anyway.
To read a horoscope by the hoot of an owl.
Yeah. That is our proverb. Yeah. To read a horoscope by the hoot of an owl.
Yeah. Did we not say that already? Oh, sorry. I just introduced it. That's what it is.
Yeah. It's a really lovely one. A really, really cute one. I mean, the origins of this one. It's really quite quaint.
Yeah, it's adorable. And I've always enjoyed children's books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's what's on your bedside.
Yeah.
And that's not because you have small children, because you don't.
Well, now my children are grown. Yeah. Well, I discovered it when the kids were small. Mm-hmm. It's really lovely. It comes out of a children's book.
Yeah.
And I have a dog-eared copy that sits on my bedside table.
Yeah, and you read it to Liz, your wife, in the evening.
Yeah, yeah, it's nice.
Liz. Sidle over here. Is it sidle
scooch,
or saddle?
I just like to say scooch.
You say scooch. Sorry. I have never heard your bedroom talk, but I was imagining you say sidle over here, but you say scooch.
Yeah. I'm like, well, scooch over here, honey. Let's read a horoscope by the hoot of an owl.
And she's like, aw, Pete.
You're so sweet.
So I'm imagining. Okay. You and Liz, and there you are. She's scooched over.
Yeah, it's the book, right? She scooches over and I pull out the book and it's got a purple cover and it's like worn at the edges. I've read so many times. It's a great book. It's called The Owl of Today.
Yeah.
By Anna Manti. Remember? And did you read this to your kids?
Well, you know what, Pete, with my kids, we only let them watch television. We hid the books. And it was, because I really think books corrupt the mind. As everybody knows, yeah. I mean, you and I have, audience, full disclosure, we have two different ways of viewing child development. Yeah. I said, put the books away. One time, my husband, Brian, he kept like a pamphlet out and boy, did we have a huge fight because A, the kids can get a paper cut, right? Mm-hmm. B, all that shininess from the pamphlet. Yeah. I think it's just too distracting.
And also it's a resource thing. Cause you know, a book, it can all be one thing and you know, your screen, it can change all the time. I know that's what you say.
That's right. It can recycle. One screen and I have 100 billion type of images that could happen. What is your little crummy, the owl of today? I mean, it's just one thing and it's really not good for the environment, Pete. And I think you should think about that.
Well, I mean, I only want it to be one thing. It's this great story. It's called The Owl of Today, and there's millions of starlings. And you see starlings, those are the birds that fly out around in murmurations. There's like big clouds of them, and they do this incredible. If you haven't seen
I've seen it, and they block the sun, and I don't like them. So I get out my BB gun, and I try to shoot them down every time.
They are an invasive species.
Well, yeah. Thank you for being on my side.
Well, this is going to, I'm going to try and elaborate the story a little bit.
Go ahead, Pete. But you know, this is bringing out the side of where we don't get along, but go ahead. Okay. I'll let you talk.
So the millions of starlings are like flying around and ravaging the fields.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And there's just one owl.
Yep.
And it's the one owl, you know, and the, and it's.
And the owl kind of like lords over its little bitches, right?
That's one way of reading. I always think of the owl as a benevolent, you know, a wise elder.
You know, it's this, I don't know why this is just bringing out our differences. You got this male asshole owl who just like, bitches, get out of, like, stop taking up the grain. You're taking away the food for my food, which is the mouse. So the owl is swooping down saying, back off, bitch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, Lisa, I'm sorry that you don't see the holistic beauty of nature sometimes.
You know, though, when you talk like that, your little blue eyes start to piss me off. You know, you start out as this handsome stud, and I'm going to just be honest right now, Pete. I was thinking, I'm going to tap that later. And you know what I'm thinking now? I'm thinking, I don't want any part of that.
I'm gonna slap that. Maybe you're
thinking. I need to slap that blue steely eye. Those out of your eye sockets.
You know, it's really. I'm really sorry to hear about the anger that brews inside you, and I really would love if I could help you to find a way towards inner peace and a little bit more balance.
Listen, Pete. You know, I like how you're trying to be the peacemaker here, and usually I'm all for it. But I think
the firearms and the shooting of innocent birds, you mean?
How are these birds innocent? First of all they're dancing up in the sky. Like
all the creatures of nature are innocent.
This isn't going to work. This right now isn't going to work. You know what? Why don't we just go right back to this, to read a horoscope by the hoot of an owl and your little stupid ragtag purple book with your sweet little cute wife, because Liz is adorable. And, you know, that's one side that we can agree on.
Yes.
Your wife is gorgeous and adorable. You know, maybe we find where the middle ground
is. I'm so glad we found some common ground.
Yeah, let's do it.
On my wife's attractiveness.
She is. She's a doll.
Yeah. Well, you know, millions of starlings, one single owl. The starlings are flying around just mindlessly.
Yeah, we can agree with that. So we got these starlings. Mm-hmm. They're mindlessly going around.
Yeah.
So we got the owl.
The owl hoots.
The owl's overlooking, right?
The starlings all alight on a single tree. And the owl opens her book of horoscopes and reads to the starlings. And I know you know what the owl says because, you know, I've told you about this story before and
of agreeable mind.
Mm-hmm.
The owl reads to each one of those little
starlings.
Bitchy starlings. Sorry, these starlings.
They're beautiful creatures, Lisa.
And they were all born on a different day. They all came from the same. So the owl's reading.
Hatched, yeah.
They hatched. Mm-hmm. So the owl reads to the first starling.
Mm-hmm.
And I quote, "Starling, starling, starling so bright. Your starling horoscope tonight. Wish I may, wish I might, bite.
Yeah. All the grain that is in sight.
Yeah. Kiss my ass."
Yeah. Lisa, try to control yourself now. Come on. We're trying to explicate this saying, explain to people. So that is an example of the horoscopes that the owl reads. And that's why this book is so endlessly interesting, because there's hundreds of starlings and there's hundreds of horoscopes.
Hundreds of horoscopes.
And each one is a source of comfort and joy and soothing harmony for the universe.
For the starlings, owls can't read.
Yeah.
Starlings can't hear. They don't have an English language. And that's why books are such a crime to our children. These books put ideas into children's head, and that's why we're in this mess we are today.
Well, I'll just explain before we launch into, maybe we'll go offline with our argument over nature versus firearms.
You don't want to be whipped in front of our audience.
That may be true. In any case, to read a horoscope by the hoot of an owl is a saying that you say when someone says something that's wise and feels special just to you and you find very soothing and calming. So Lisa, perhaps I should read you a horoscope by the hoot of an owl.
Well, do I need to scooch next to you, Pete?
I think you should.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of The Improverbial.
you want to improvise with us? You can yes and the Improverbial podcast and be a sponsor. Please reach out to theimproverbial@gmail.com.
Yeah.